A new study shows that most Americans know and trust their neighbors. According to Lifeway Research, 59% of respondents say they know the names of many people who live near them. 57% say they look for opportunities to talk with those who live nearby. And 68% say they trust the people in their local communities. The director of Lifeway says he finds this encouraging that despite a year and a half of social distancing and political tension, two-thirds of Americans still trust their fellow community members. How about you? Let us know your thoughts at 800-642-1234. How well do you know your neighbors? Do you talk to them, water their plants when they're gone? Are you comfortable asking them for, say, a cup of sugar? Have you done things to try to get to know your neighbors better? Have you moved from one place to another, maybe having a hard time getting to know the people in the apartment building or the block or whatever the case may be? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Mark Dunkelman is a fellow in international and public affairs at Brown University. He's the author of the book, The Vanishing Neighbor, The Transformation of American Community. Mark, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thrilled to be here.
This is just one survey saying that at least most of us know our neighbors. You've written about your concerns that we're less in contact with our neighbors. What are you seeing these days?
Well, I think that we don't know yet what the long-term effects of the pandemic will be. There's some evidence to suggest that in the absence of being able to travel, we've invested more time and attention in the people who are proximate to us, who live, you know, in the blocks and houses nearby or homes nearby. But then there's also evidence to suggest that the fact that we couldn't go out, that we didn't want to see people face to face, left us more dependent on connecting through electronic means, Zooming to meetings, checking our social media, calling our best friends who live far away. And I think it's a little early to know how that will shake up, particularly as we see the pandemic hopefully coming to an end soon. Certainly we're not out of the woods.
You've been thinking about neighbors for a long time before the pandemic, and you are worried about this category of people in our lives. Not the closest people. We still stay in touch with those close friends and family members. We have a lot of contacts with almost strangers on the internet. You're worried about that middle group. Can you talk about that center area of our friend diagram here and why you're worried if it gets hollowed out?
Yeah, so the core thesis of my research is that if you organize all the people that you know on a diagram that looks like the rings of Saturn, where you're the planet and your closest contacts, your spouse, your parents, your children, your best friends are in the inner rings, and then you place everyone else you know on rings moving further and further out depending on intimacy, that over the course of the last half century or so, three things have happened. One is we've invested much more time and attention in the innermost ring. So these are the people that you tend to text with, right? People that you know really well. We're more in touch with our spouses. You know, when my wife leaves for work in the morning, I text her all day long, whereas my grandparents largely, you know, they kissed each other goodbye and didn't see each other till dinner. So that's a big change, is that we're in touch with those people more frequently. Secondly, we're much more in touch with people in the outermost ring. So two people who both have the same hobby or share the same politics or have the same concerns about something can be in touch even if they live halfway around the world. And that's what happens. We've spent much more time on social media in touch with that sort of person. The third thing is sort of the result of the first two, which is that because more of our social capital, more of our own fund of time and attention are devoted to those inner and outer rings, we've largely abandoned the middle rings, which are people who are familiar but not intimate. So that's your neighbor, the people that would have been in your bowling league that you no longer attend, or the people that you no longer see at the PTA because those meetings are Zoom or what have you. And I'm happy to talk about what the effects of that are. There are advantages and disadvantages to all these relationships. But one of the core concerns about losing middle ring relationships is that that's really our most important bridge to people who think differently. So two people who live near each other who have different politics, you know, everyone they know intimately may share the same politics. Everyone they talk to in the outer rings, they don't really know that well, but maybe, perhaps they just talk about sports with those people, or perhaps they agree already on politics. It's in the middle rings that you come across people who have different points of view. And that's not just politics. It's on any number of subjects. And it's where you begin to glean a clearer picture of what people with different points of view think about a whole range of issues. And so in the absence of strong middle rings, we lose that window of insight.
We're talking to Mark Dunkelman from Brown University, author of the book, The Vanishing Neighbor, The Transformation of American Community. And we want to hear from you now at 800-642-1234. How well do you know your neighbors? Are you close friends with the people who live on your block or your floor? Or do you know them by name? Do they go into your house when you're gone to feed a pet, say? Or do you have no clue who you live next to? Has it changed over the course of your life, in your neighborhood, or when you've moved? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We heard on Facebook from Carrie, who writes, "We lived on 21 acres for 8 years, so moving into a neighborhood was daunting. Until we realized how kind, open, and elderly our new neighbors are. We watch out, meet in the street, try to beat each other and bring in the garbage cans. My bestie next door is 89. For the last 2 years, I've stood at her kitchen window and had belly laughs with her." Carrie says, "I am grateful." That, Mark, that seems like the old school vision of what a neighborhood could be. And it's a reality for Carrie and a lot of people. How do we recreate that if we don't have that with our next door neighbor?
Well, that's the $100,000 question. There's no magic formula, but I do think that it takes a certain amount of initiative and commitment from each individual, right? You can't, the relationships that you already have with the people that you're intimate with are not relationships you have to form. You don't have to, there's no awkwardness to saying hello to your mom or to your child or to your best friend. In the outer rings, where you have social media connections, if you don't like someone, you just unfollow them. If you don't enjoy a conversation, you can jump out of it very easily. There's much more weight that goes with a relationship with a neighbor. That in the relationship you just talked about with someone who moved into a neighborhood and met their next door neighbor, if that relationship had gone sour, it's very awkward to live near someone who you've had words with, or that you have some sort of real substantive disagreement with. So people are in many cases disinclined to make that investment. So the question is, what can we do in America, I think, to make it so that people feel more inclined to reach out? Even if one person voted for this presidential candidate and another person voted for the other, how do you keep things both substantive but light?
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Lee is with us in Knife River, Minnesota. Lee, hi.
Hi. Interesting program. I was curious to know what the author thought the impact of vacation rentals is on neighborhoods and communities.
Interesting question, Lee. And yeah, a lot of times, more and more commonly in some communities, Mark, our neighbor is TBD. Somebody's going to rent for 3 days or 2 weeks.
I guess I haven't put a great deal of thought into it, but I know that there are neighborhoods that feel inundated by people who just come in temporarily, set up shop, have a vacation, and head out. And so the people there who rent, you know, very briefly at an Airbnb or a VRBO or whatever you have there aren't invested in the neighborhood. On the other hand, there are, I think, Airbnb hosts that really get to know the people that come and stay in the spare loft over their garage, and that becomes an important connection for them. A neighborly connection maybe welcomes them into the neighborhood, gives those people who are staying an opportunity to meet somebody who they otherwise wouldn't have come across with. I think, you know, when Airbnb started, that was really the central premise of the program, was to give people an opportunity to meet people from another walk of life. And so I think it probably cuts both ways. I don't know what the net effect is, but it's a really interesting question.
Lee, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking about the benefits of knowing our neighbors. Mark Dunkelman is with us, fellow in international and public affairs at Brown University, author of The Vanishing Neighbor, The Transformation of American Community. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Whether you know your neighbors really well or don't know them at all or any point in between, love to hear your story and your thoughts on why you do or don't know your neighbors, trust your neighbors. Have you made efforts to get to know people? Maybe a backyard grill out, say, for the neighbors. Call 800-642-1234. Have them over to watch the Packer game. I don't think anybody made friends on that one this weekend. 800-642-1234 is the number, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about the benefits of knowing your neighbors. A new study from Lifeway Research shows that 59% of Americans surveyed say they know the names of many people who live nearby. Leaves a lot of people who don't, clearly. 68% say they trust those who live in their local communities. Mark Dunkelman stays with us, fellow in international and public affairs at Brown University, author of The Vanishing Neighbor, The Transformation of American Community. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Tell us how well you know or don't know your neighbors and how important those relationships are to you. Let us know how you've gotten to know people in your neighborhood, if you've had. Did it take effort along the way? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We got an email from Christine who says, I live in an intentional community, a co-housing condo in Madison, so I know everyone who lives in the building. We have three common meals per week, a lot of other activities and committees and groups that we're all in. So we're all actively participating in creating our community. I walk my neighbor's dog. Whether I'm gone for more than a day, I ask my neighbors to watch my pets too. And if anyone needs a cup of sugar or carrot or some glue, all we need to do is send out an email to the condo. Within 5 minutes, someone will be at your door. That's a rare kind of experience, I think, Mark, but people going into their community planning to know their neighbors. What do you think?
I think it's terrific when people make that intentional decision to join a community where people have an mutual obligation to one another. I think, you know, what's interesting is that there are a lot of places that are physically set up to have that sort of relationship emerge organically, right? A place where you have townhomes that are close together or an apartment building, and where people who live right on top of each other, maybe there's just a wall that separates them, pass each other in the hall every day and never say hello, right? That they feel awkward. They don't want to break into someone's personal space. They feel like there's some aura of privacy just because two people live in the same building, they shouldn't have a relationship. And that's the shame of it, right? Is that you shouldn't need to move into a community that is intentional about having three meals a week done in a common area. It should be that people are knocking on the door, welcoming people to a new neighbor. It should be that people are bringing cookies over, once a year, or inviting their neighbors over for dinner or for coffee. It should be that when you see someone who lives down the street at the supermarket, you say hello. But that the norms, the sort of typical rhythms of many communities in America, and it really differs from one to the next, but on the whole, over the course of the last 50 years, that norm has ebbed such that privacy sort of has overtaken the sort of sense of mutual obligation that once existed in a lot of parts of America.
Thanks for that email, Christine. We are taking your neighbor stories. Want to know how well you know your neighbors at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Mark, that privacy bubble where we don't feel like we can intrude on each other's space, even if we live right next door, and maybe we don't want people to do that to us. Where is that coming from? Why is that a trend in American culture?
Well, I think there are a whole variety of reasons, and I like to think of this as almost like a crime where there's motive and opportunity. And if you start with the opportunity, which is that for the first time in American life, we've been given the opportunity to stay more connected to those inner and outer ring relationships. So I'm in touch with my wife all day during the day. because I can, right? We can text each other even when we're in meetings. You know, we can hold the phone below the boardroom table tell a joke. I say this aware that I'm on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm one of 17 Cincinnati Bengals fans in the entire country, and we all know each other. And so I can be in touch with those people in a way that a fellow working at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island, wouldn't have been able to 50 years ago. So the opportunities to invest in other sorts of relationships have expanded. And so there's also a literature about how our motives have changed, that we are less inclined to want to have the sort of friction that can emerge in a neighborhood, right? You know, there's a terrific app, which I bet many of your listeners have explored, which is called Nextdoor. Nextdoor connects people into a social network of people who live in their neighborhood. So maybe I'm in College Hill in a neighborhood in Providence, Rhode Island. I'm sure there are thousands of neighborhoods in Wisconsin. Similarly, and I can post, I lost my dog. I need a cup of flour. I saw that there was a crime at the local convenience store. Does anyone know anything about it? And you can be in touch with people that way. And that's a sort of a suggestion that people are reconnecting in sort of a different way. Do people want to have the sort of awkwardness of being in touch or having the mutual obligation of realizing that it's perfectly appropriate for the person next door to knock on their front door, on Saturday to say hello or to invite you over for a cup of coffee and have the awkwardness if you don't like the person. If you still have an obligation to go over and have that cup of coffee and discuss current events. Are they motivated to do that? Or would they rather spend more time, FaceTiming with their parents across the country or bickering with someone about politics on Twitter? That's sort of a question one person to the next.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Max is with us in Dane. Max, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What do you want to tell us about, Max?
Just kind of our overall neighborly problems we ran into. We moved into the neighborhood about 2 years ago and had a generally warm welcoming from all the neighbors. Made an effort to reach out to everybody and say hi, say hello, and that went well. But our closest neighbor actually possibly took that as an advantage of us being nice and started, asking us to do one thing or another on the property. And eventually we just kind of said, no, that's not really what we're going to do with the property. And that led to him kind of getting a little belligerent, kind of being, getting loud with us a little bit. And so we pulled back from that relationship a little bit, but it did lead to that kind of awkwardness and, having to see each other every day. But being a small farm community, we kind of reached out to everybody and I think it was more of a bad seed than anything else. But it is interesting. It's kind of a strange dynamic now that needs to be balanced a little bit. And
interesting.
We do welcome the neighborly, walk up the driveway and say hello, but definitely not cutting through the yard and coming up to the back door kind of thing.
Max, thanks a lot for that call. There's that friction, Mark. It might be a great neighborly relationship. Opening the door might also lead to conflict.
That's exactly right. And that's the balance that every individual has to navigate, in the sense that in a close, intimate relationship with your parents, your best friends, your children. I mean, I have two little kids and I can tell you there's some great days with them and there's some moments right before bed that aren't so terrific. And then on the outer rings, interact with someone who, you may agree with, you may not agree with. It may be a pleasant conversation that suddenly turns dark. There are lots of dangers in the outer rings. So all of these relationships comes with all of these various sort of buckets of relationships come with advantages and disadvantages. And we have to navigate them. I just think that there is something special and unique about these neighborly relationships, in the sense that if you're in line waiting for a cup of coffee or you're in line at the grocery store and you have a conversation with someone who you would have no business interacting with except in that environment. You're not, don't work in the same profession. You don't have kids in the same school. You don't share the same politics. You don't worship in the same church or synagogue or mosque, whatever, what have you, that you have no interaction, no reason to interact with them. There's something magical about the fact that in American neighborhoods, you can find a certain diversity, even in places that are overwhelmingly to the left or to the right or rural or urban. There's generally some diversity of opinion. And it's only through face-to-face interactions with people who you live near that you'll have sort of an opportunity to view the world through someone else's eyes.
Thanks for the call, Max. Time for one more call. Barry is with us in Madison. Barry, hi.
Yes, hello. Just want to share the neighborhood I live in here in Madison. We have about, I don't know, 10 or 12 houses on our block. And ages range from 30s, in the early 30s up to age 96. Have some with kids, and obviously the older ones don't. But some of us have been playing volleyball and softball together for 25 or 30 years. Hmm. We have block parties at various houses, and the old 96-year-old lady that lives next door to me, she's not playing softball with us, but she gets invited to every single party.
Excellent. Barry, thanks for that. In our last few moments, Mark, something to aspire to in our neighborhoods.
Something to aspire to in their neighborhoods. Well, I would just encourage people, even with the caller who had an awkward conversation with the neighbor who was asking him to make modifications to his own property, I think that there's something worthwhile in reaching out, offering a cup of coffee to someone who lives nearby. You'll learn something you don't know. You'll often get a little bit of history you wouldn't have any other reason to learn. It's often so worthwhile, and you never know when you'll find that contact helpful in a moment of need.
Mark, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Mark Dunkelman is a fellow in international and public affairs at Brown University. He's the author of The Vanishing Neighbor, The Transformation of American Community. We talked about the benefits of bonding with the people who live close to us and how we can get to know our neighbors better.